This is Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Okay, we're into hour number two. We made it through the first 60 minutes. That's always a good thing. If you can get through the first hour of a show, I say you can get through anything that life throws at you. Fortunately, I was joined by a very nice man called Greg Mabry in Western Australia. And very shortly, I say very shortly, I'll be joined by another nice chap, Mr. Jonathan Weissman. But before he enters stage right, I'm going to look at some items that are making the news over the last 24 hours. We try and keep things current here. We can't try and keep things up to date, as well as looking at the broader issues in society. In New York, the governor has announced there will be new gun control plans after the Buffalo shooting and has signed an order on domestic terrorism. We know, without any shadow of a doubt, the Americans armed are a pain in the ass and a thorn in the flesh to globalists. They're running around. They've got AK-47s. They've got AR-15s. They've got 44 Magnums. They've probably got hand grenades and rocket launchers under the bed. That kind of makes it difficult to enforce globalist policies. And I'm sure there's nothing more than the Biden administration would like to see is to disarm America and do away with their gun ownership rights. And no doubt we will see a proliferation of atrocities reported on, and guns will be blamed rather than the shooters themselves. So that's something to be aware of. In the UK, the JCVI, those gangsters in London, Joint Committee for Vaccine and Immunization, or whatever title they go under, have provided interim advice to the government regarding the COVID-19 booster doses this autumn. They are like dogs with bones, rabid dogs with bones. They just won't let this thing be. COVID, booster, even though they're a dead duck, okay? They're a dead duck. These booster shots, these injections are nothing but trouble. They're all risk and no reward, unlike me, who has no risk and no reward. So the JCVI are pimping their products again come the autumn time. They recommend that residents in care homes and staff in care homes, health and social care workers, those aged 65 and over, and adults aged 16 to 64 who are in a clinical risk group should roll up their sleeves yet again for another shot. Do you know what? If this continues in a few years, people will be like pincushions. They'll be rolling up their arms like a heroin addict. We'll show you track marks up his veins. People will be showing their deltoid muscles with holes everywhere. They're like pincushions. So think twice, folks. Think twice before going down that route. Also in the UK, and this is something we're never going to avoid, this is going to dominate conversation for a while yet, monkeypox. Britain's monkeypox outbreak doubles in size. Okay, the rhetoric's beginning. It's doubling in size. What does that mean? It means it went from 5 to 10 cases. Okay, that's the doubling in size. Okay, if it goes from 1 to 2 cases, it's doubled. It's 100% up. Twisting the figures. They stockpiled thousands of vaccines amid fears that infections are, quote, spiraling, unquote. So undoubtedly, that's something we're going to touch on over the course of the next 60 minutes. We will be right back. This is TNT Radio.
Get breaking news on your phone when it happens. Download our app from the Google Play and App Store now.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, back again, beaming in from wherever it is that he's beamed in from. We have Mr. Jonathan Weissman, who is looking quite angelic this morning, I must say. He's wearing a white shirt. Maybe it's a white robe. I don't know. The sun is coming in from behind him. There's like a halo around his headphones. Unlike me, I'm always in black. Greg Mabry was dressed like a hunter, like something out of a Rambo movie. Johnny, you look like you've just descended from heaven itself. Is that the case, or have you just came in from the garden?
Well, I thought I'd wear white today. Why not? It's such a dark topic we're talking about. It's also heavy, so sort of lighten the mood and put you in a good mood.
Well, you have, by the way, you have, and yeah, I appreciate you coming back. Does it seem like 2 weeks when you come back on? It's like this benchmark for time, the passage of time for me. And it's like, has it really been 2 weeks since he's been back here? Where has the time gone, my friend?
For me, it's just every day there's something new, especially just the last couple of days leading up to today. As you mentioned, with the monkeypox, with the WHO, I can really sense that increase in anticipation in terms of what the next move is going to be and how desperate they are to cling on to their narrative. So I agree, it's a very intense time right now.
It is. And by the way, if you're tuning in and you haven't encountered Jonathan before, whether it be on the show or whether it be on social media or the internet, he's on Twitter at All The Risks. That's at All The Risks. And he also has a website, alltherisks.com. He's a cyber guy, actually, by trade. And you know what? We've never even talked about cyber, really. We've touched on it a little bit here and there. But his bread and butter over the last 12 months seems to have been deep dives into vaccine products, vaccine ingredients, vaccine adverse reactions, vaccine damages, and so on and so forth. And here we are today. We're talking about it, and you've almost been validated and vindicated by Pfizer themselves and the output that they're spewing forth at a rate of knots concerning their clinical trials or lack of clinical trials, adverse reactions, etc. How do you feel seeing all this coming to pass? I'm sure it's not nice because you're right, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I called this 12 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really difficult. Obviously, you just remain really focused. That's the key thing. For me, I always say to people, a lot of people would be like, why aren't you more frustrated? You get more angry. It's because I'm that focused. If I drop the ball, if we stray into, you know, ad hominem attacks and things like that, we'll lose the plot. We have to remain focused on the goal. For me, my goal was incredibly simple and hopefully powerful. And it's simply this: to document as broadly, widely, and easily available as possible all the risks. A simple concept, but that's the sort of torch that I've run with, if you will. And I think that's really important, is keep in mind something that you want to do that's positive, that will achieve an end goal in and of itself, regardless of what happens. So even if we didn't see the lack of efficacy that we've seen against the circulating variants, and we see the likes of the CDC trying to not release the data because it doesn't look good, we see changes of the narrative. Even if we saw the product holding up in terms of efficacy, all the long-term safety risks I'm speaking about would always hold up. And it's always pertinent for people to be aware of them, because that's what informed consent is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something I had a guest on, I've had her on twice, actually, Dr. Kat Lindley, who's over in the UK at the moment. She's American-based, but she's over in the UK at the Better Way Conference, which, if you want to check that out as well, a little plug for that, it's betterwayconference.org. That's a coming together of a lot of like-minded individuals with a lot of knowledge, experience, and sway. And that's something that she defined very, very well, informed consent. What is it, or what should it be? It should be a conversation that happens between a medical professional and someone that's about to undergo either a procedure or take medication or take an injection or whatever it happens to be. It's a conversation, and at the end of that conversation, the recipient should fully understand the risks and the rewards, or the risks and the benefits and the pitfalls potentially of what is about to happen to them. That's what informed consent actually is. And if anything, the last 2 years, year and a half has highlighted is there is no informed consent being practiced anymore on the whole, maybe in occasions here and there sporadically. There's pockets of it with decent medical professionals, but by and large, they're just wheeling people in, wheeling people out, and it's just like a broad brush. They're just slapping everyone with the same advice, whether they be young, old, sick, rich or poor, it doesn't matter. It's roll up your sleeve, take your jab, get jabbed, get boosted. Where's the informed consent gone?
Well, there isn't any. And we know this from just speaking to people. If I speak to 100 people who've taken the injection, sadly, they're not aware of the things I'm talking about. It used to be the case if I would say it's experimental, if I would say there's no long-term safety studies, if I would say it's still in clinical trials until 2023 or 2024, I would be met with not only incredulation, but attempting to fact check me, which goes nowhere, which shows even on the most basic of points, a lot of people don't know. What I would say is you can make an argument for these jabs, at least at the beginning. When they first came out, according to clinical, all you knew was 95% efficacy, and you heard that there was no significant side effects associated with the jab. According to the official documentation and the official press releases, yes, that was accurate at the time of the initial approvals by FDA, December 2020. Even the likes of Dr. Geert van den Bosch says initially, he wasn't so concerned about the jab. At the very, very beginning, he didn't speak till about March 21. And why is that? Because there wasn't a lot of raw patient level data, let's just say. They present the data to you in a way that doesn't sound too bad. 95% reduction in cases sounds pretty good until you realize that's reduction in symptomatic disease. And by the way, it's PCR testing or nucleic acid amplification testing. They are not going to the lab and working out whether this is productive infectious material. Even Public Health England put out a document in October 2020 saying PCR test, which is known, does not distinguish infectious material. My big question for the clinical trials on efficacy, when the whole world's waiting with bated breath, and there's an evolutionary story that can take place with the variants. If your endpoint was stopping the virus being infected people and transmitted, why did you not propagate in a level 3 biosafety lab, which is what's required, every one of the tests? And why did you not test everyone every single day to actually determine the impact on transmission? So what happens is we have marketing by the likes of Pfizer in the early days. Many people were either completely deceived or not as worried as they've now become. But at this point, there is an overwhelming amount of evidence from the public adverse reaction systems and in the academic literature on molecular biology. Everyone at this point should be able to do the scientific method and reevaluate the data in light of the disclosures.
Mm-hmm. And despite all that, despite what you have just said and what I covered briefly just before you came on air, you know, the JCVI, the so-called experts in England, are still recommending that people go out in the autumn time, get boosted, and they're listing who should be done. You know, residents of care homes, workers in care homes, 16 to 64-year-olds with weakened immune systems, and so on and so forth. Despite what you've just said, you have that on one side of the equation, and then you have the JCV on the other side of the equation that effectively is saying, well, you know what, screw that. We're just going to tell people to go out and get boosted. Anyway, it's like they're doubling down on their bad information because they can't actually accept the fact that they have potentially massacred so many people and certainly maimed and wounded so many more. There was a quote here that I'm going to give you that was recently from Stefan Ulrich on the World Health Summit. He is a WAF associate. His name's Stefan, Stefan Ulrich, Ulrich. He's a World Economics Forum associate, and he's on the board of Bayer Pharmaceuticals. And what he says is, speaking about gene therapy, he says, we're going to make a difference, hopefully, moving forward. Ultimately, mRNA vaccines are an example. If we had survived if we had surveyed 2 years ago, would you be prepared to take gene/cell therapy and inject it into your body? We would probably had a 95% refusal rate. So here we have one of these peddlers of poison saying that had we actually told you what you were getting, 95% of you wouldn't have taken it. What do you think about that?
100%. This links directly back to what you were talking about with informed consent. All I'm really asking for, people like me, we respect people enough that if you take away the coercion, if you take away the ice creams and the free McDonald's and the free chips and the blackmail, taking away their jobs and their right to travel, to go on holiday, be name called and bullied and so on and so forth, take all that away, take all the marketing away, take all the NHS videos away, take all the emotional manipulation, take all the stuff about you're being a good citizen, it's your civic duty. Just go and give us town hall, public hall debates. Just give us dispassionate presentations of safety, efficacy, and unknown risks. Now, I can give a great example of this. And I just tweeted this out yesterday, and I'm going to be really banging on this drum for a while. One particular area of the risks of mRNA technology that is a serious risk and has been completely, let's just say, not spoken about by health authorities. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to September 2019, there's an FDA scientist, Dr. Katarina Alexakai. She gives a presentation. So she's mainstream, works for the US regulator, and she's gives a half-hour presentation. It's on YouTube. I tweeted it out on codon optimization. Now, what this is a technique that's been used in Pfizer and Moderna's jab to increase the amount of protein that's translated. Because remember, principally, it's a gene therapy to express a foreign protein that the body doesn't know, not in the lab in very controlled environments, like you would in a more traditional vaccine. You may have a protein-based vaccine and then you inject it, but in the cells of the recipients of the jab. This technique, what it does is it replaces rarer, what we call codons, which is basically triples of nucleotides. So the RNA code ACUG, it replaces rare ones with more common ones because it's been observed that you get quicker and more prolonged protein expression. But the problem is it's been associated right up until 2019 with disease, okay, with really serious adverse problems. So Dr. Alexica in the presentation, she goes through, she says, this is in several studies. She's just giving a dispassionate presentation. She says, what you can do, you may increase the protein translation, but you might overwhelm the cell expressing the protein and the quality control mechanism of the cell is reduced. You may get misfolded proteins. Now, why am I bringing up misfolded proteins? This is one of the biggest concerns that the late Professor Luc Montagnier raised before he passed away a couple of months ago, former Nobel Prize winner, prion disease. You take a foreign protein, the spike protein, you inject it, but you modify it in such a way, codon optimization, okay, which doesn't change the actual sequence of the amino acids. The protein, the primary structure, the nucleotides are the same because two different codons can code for the same amino acid, which constitutes the protein, but it has secondary effects in terms of how it folds, the energy, things like that. This is known. It's known. FDA scientists admits it openly, dispassionately, without any trying to cover it up, September 2019 with disease progression. Now, I've just come across a preprint paper of Luc Montagnier. In fact, he's a co-author. The main author is Jean-Claude Perez, February 22. So he's just passed away. It's a paper. 26 cases of novel aggression of CJD, which is a neurodegenerative disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, 8 of which die shortly after one of the mRNA vaccines. And they're making the link between prion disease and misfolded proteins, exacerbating the risk of the spike protein and neurological conditions. But this is a known risk. When have you ever heard any of our public health leaders or any of our literature talking about the risk of that one modification, GC-rich codon optimization? Have you ever heard that?
Not at all. I mean, you mentioned CJD there. That was also known as mad cow disease, I believe, if I'm not mistaken about that, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. There's so many things when you actually cast your mind back, if you can cast your mind back 2 years ago, when Chris Whitty, who is the chief medical officer, I believe, in the UK, along with Patrick Vallance, who's the chief scientific officer. When Chris Whitty first came out and he first primed the people of the United Kingdom about what was about to hit them in terms of COVID-19, he was pretty much bang on in what he said. He said, listen, you don't have to worry too much about this. It's primarily going to affect very old people, people with comorbidities. There's a very small chance you'll be hospitalized. And if you're hospitalized, there's a very small chance you'll be ventilated. And if you're ventilated, there's a very small chance you'll die. It's really nothing to be concerned about. I have a video compilation of Matt Hancock, of Jonathan Van Tam, of Chris Whitty, of Patrick Vallance, of various other people saying masks don't work, they're useless, up until around about May to June of 2020-ish, 2 years ago, give or take a month, 2 years ago. So from March until June, they seem to be talking sense, for want of a better expression. Then it seemed to be a flick. There was a flick of the switch that happened and a complete about turn and a U-turn between May and June of 2020 that has escalated into the insanity right now. That is something that I have pondered, and I tell you what, actually, I'm going to ask you what you think about that, but we're going to take a break because I have a feeling it's going to take you more than a minute to give me an answer to that. So we're going to take a break and we'll be back. You're listening to Jonathan Weissman and Rick Munn on TNT Radio. Don't go away.
You should hear what Hrvoje Morić is talking about.
This morning, I woke up to discover I've permanently been banned by a PayPal, as well as a number of other podcasters and, wow. and writers, which is, you know, one of the principal ways I've been funding my Geopolitics of Empire podcast, the other thing that I work on. It's clear for me that this direction has come from the U.S. government, likely the Pentagon, to Silicon Valley. I don't think it's PayPal making the decision. It's the government. Right. This is a textbook example of fascism. So it's 2022, and I'm openly experiencing fascism.
Hrvoje Morić on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
Welcome to the latest edition of Who Wants to Be Prime Minister? That's right, today it's Albo versus ScoMo. Who will be the first to stuff it all up?
Price of bread, $3.50. Cash rate, 0.1%.
All right, let's go, Albo.
Anthony Albanese, welcome to the show. How are you? Oh, yeah, I'm good, thanks. You're good. 13% of the nation is living under the poverty line, and you're good. Oh, sorry, I didn't know we'd started. He didn't even know we'd started. He's not ready, he's not prepared.
I'm prepared.
And Scott Morrison, how are you?
Well, Andrew, I'm busy. Working day and night for all Australians. Unlike Take It Easy Albanese over here.
Devastating first round for Albo. ScoMo is in his element here. Just look at the way he works the media. They're eating out of the palm of his hands.
Albo, what's the current unemployment rate?
Well, the national unemployment rate at the moment is it's 4.
Mr. Morrison,
jumps. Oh, come on, that's not an answer.
All right, it's time for the speed round. Albo, how much is it for a 45-minute Thai massage?
$85.65.
Scott, what has four wheels and flies?
A garbage truck.
Albo, what's the surname of the family of Malcolm in the Middle?
Wilkinson.
Scott, why does Michael J. Fox make the best milkshakes?
Well, he uses the finest ingredients.
Albo, what's heavier, a kilogram of bricks or a kilogram of feathers?
Bricks!
Wrong, they both weigh the same, you f***ing idiot! And Scott Morrison is the winner!
Right, that's it! This was supposed to be an easy win for me, and you're all making me look like a bloody idiot. How about instead of trying to trip us up and ask us dumb questions, you ask me some proper questions about our policies?
What's Labor's policy on Australian coal mining?
Mr. Morrison?
Okay, we're done. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
To find out more, visit onenation.org.au.
Government has taken our rights and will never give them back unless we make them. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm asking questions this morning. We like to ask questions. We like to ask ourselves questions. We like to ask you people questions. We like to ask our guests questions. So I've asked the question. The question is, what happened between March and May of 2020 that Jonathan Van Tam, Chris Whitty, Matt Hancock, Patrick Vallance, they all seemed to switch their stance on COVID? Were they wrapped over the knuckles by their masters, or did they just simply lose their minds? What do you think?
Well, it could be one of a couple of possibilities. You know, as you said, it could have been they were told to toe the line, but then of course they could have, say, resigned on principle. They could have made their stand. Mm-hmm. Looking across the world globally, where have we really seen any examples of top health leaders who've been brought into the upper echelons of the government making a stand, doing the right thing, and taking the fall, basically? We don't really see that. So I tend to think that in order to get to the kind of positions that they've already got to, prominent positions within national health, public health infrastructure, probably they've already been pretty compliant with things like the pharmaceutical industry, perhaps novel drugs, things like that. It seems to be the way things have been going for a while in terms of conflicts of interest, let's just say. I think it's likely that that these people who nobody knew who they were before get brought to the top table. We know that power corrupts. We know that they've never had such power in their lives. And if you think about how, you know, totalitarians often operate, they sort of purge out maybe the initial level of the senior military officers. Then you then promote a bunch of junior people who are really compliant and really grateful to be there. I see it kind of similarly. It's like nobody knew who Patrick Vallance was. Nobody knew who Chris Whitty was or Jonathan Van Tam. Now we all do. And they're probably quite grateful to have been put in that position you know, they feel like rock stars. I've seen, it's in some of the NHS promotional material, people getting their jab in the video with a Jonathan Van Tam t-shirt on, drinking from a Jonathan Van Tam mug. You know, all the memes, you know, some people, their memes are like pro-establishment memes, and to them it's really cool. So I think if you've been elevated to that, and maybe a knighthood's coming if you haven't got one, maybe OBE, MBE, you name it, right? All the trappings, maybe you're going to end up making a lot of money. You're going to do speaking tours. I saved the country from COVID. You're not going to ask the critical questions. Maybe you should be, you know, I think that's what's going on.
I had a conversation, something similar with Rob Hutchinson from South Africa yesterday. He runs a big non-profit organization called Dear South Africa. It's actually very good. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but they have a very unique approach to petitions. So for example, when they bring something before Parliament, in the UK, you would sign a petition along with 100,000 other people, and it's presented to the government as one petition. What they do is they take each individual signature as an individual petition and send it to the government. So their last campaign was against new emergency COVID regulations. They've got 300,000 signatures. Those are presented to Parliament and must be formally acknowledged and responded to as individual petitions. So it absolutely inundates and swamps the government and their administration with these petitions. But that's something, actually, he was talking about trying to use that model and maybe bringing it to the US and the UK. Very, very good. You check that guy out, actually, dearsouthafrica.co.za. That's a website you may be interested in, just because it's a different angle and a different way to approach things. And Rob is a very astute individual indeed. But we were talking about the same thing. Why do people switch? Why do people seem to be on side one day and off side the next day? I think another aspect, Jonathan, is that maybe Van Tam, Whitty, Hancock, etc., could see the way they knew the plans and the schemes that the World Economic Forum were concocting. And they made a decision, well, if we don't get on board with them now and this NWO does get ushered in, we will be at the wrong side of it. We will be shut out of it. We want to be looked after. We want to be respected. And we want to, if it does get ushered in, we will be at the wrong side of it. We will be shut out of it. We want to be looked after. We want to be respected. And we want to maintain our place in that new order. So they simply complied and towed the line. I think that's another aspect to it. They saw the writing on the wall. And unfortunately, they didn't resign. They didn't make a stand. They were thinking, okay, I'm going to weigh this up on in the balances, and I'm gonna side with Klaus Schwab and co.
Of course, and not to put too fine a point on it and tell people what they should have done, had we seen a mass resignation of top doctors, top judges, top everything, or some kind of coordinated strike action, you know, we might have been able to bring this thing down. The way it's gone, though, because so few people have done really what we're doing, which is speaking out, what I call fully publicly. You know, and I do appreciate everyone who, you know, on the down low feeds me bits of intelligence or, you know, whispers in my ear, go look at this, go look at that, who are in the background. But really what's required is people who are forward facing. Because when I think about it for myself and for others I know in the movement, it really is speak out, do the right thing, expose these unfruitful works of darkness. I am completely aware if things like the online harms bill go through and, you know, become very rigorously enforced, or you could say loosely interpreted, right? And actors against the state are deemed to be those who spread information that contradicts established public health messaging, which is what's going on social media all the time, which is supposed to be representative of the mainstream, you know? If this happens, some of us could face, you know, serious problems in the not too distant future. But as far as I see, if we didn't turn this thing around, if it doesn't get turned around, there's no future, like nothing. Right. Like I have no interest. Like it's, I'm not going to get out of bed in the morning for a health security state. I'm just not, it's just not worth it, you know?
Agree. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but I was encouraged this week that TNT are being highlighted now by the mainstream media in Australia as being an alternate feather ruffling hornet nest poking alternate media source. We are sponsoring an awards. It's the equivalent of the Australian Oscars. Greg Mabry, my last guest, was telling me for the media, the Kennedy Awards, we are sponsoring it. We are a part sponsor of that. And that has pissed a lot of the establishment off because they're like, well, why are these people getting involved? They're not towing the line. They're speaking out against government policy. They're speaking out against the narrative. And now they're starting to write about us in a negative light, but that's a good thing because it's starting to bring spotlight upon us. And as they said, in their own words, they said TNT Radio has only been in force for around about 6 months and they are on a tour. That's their word. They're on a tour, recruiting people from all over the world, getting people in from different backgrounds, speaking out against the media, attacking government policy. And I'm hoping that this is the beginning of us popping our heads up over the parapet. Finally, it hasn't taken that long. It's really only been 4 months, not 6 months, 4 months, but we're already starting to hack people off in the mainstream media. And that, my friend, I'm very happy about that. You should be, you're part of this too. You're part of the problem.
Well, all I can say is a massive acknowledgement to the hard work that's gone in with you, Rick, and everyone at TNT Radio, Jeffrey in the studio and everyone else, because why I think it's so pertinent what TNT is doing right now, this is a global movement right now because we're facing a global threat. We know about the pandemic treaty that's being discussed in a couple of days' time at the WHO. Okay, we know that everything is kind of rolling up now towards globally dictated health policies. And that's the only way to interpret what happened at the end of the day, you know, in sort of March to June 2020. Ultimately, there was a, whether it was a tap on the shoulder, whether it was a weapon held at someone's back, whether it was a deal done in darkness, you know, bribery, we have no idea and we'll probably never know. The point is, this is happening in all the countries. I've heard various people claim that they know what that thing was that convinced that world leader to take that position. What we can say is this: there's a layer at the top, the likes of, you know, Yuval Harari, Bill Gates, but also the actual bodies themselves. And this is where it's starting to turn now from being just about theories and possible, you know, flamboyant personalities who exert a lot of influence into an actual treaty. And I'm talking about the pandemic treaty on Sunday. That's that the US, the US of all people are trying to undermine their own sovereignty and everyone else's. Mm-hmm. In the light of such a global war, of a global totalitarian struggle, a radio show that distributes and decentralizes its producers or its radio hosts and has local content at all different times of the day, I think it's a powerful idea.
It is. And I do feel, sadly, I must say that I do feel that, you know, the nails are already being driven into the coffin for various social media platforms. So there's a spectrum of censorship that exists. So somewhere like YouTube and Facebook are super strict. Twitter is still very strict, but just not so bad as those other platforms. Somewhere like Telegram and Rumble and BitChute and various other places, Getter, could be looked upon as even less stringent than Twitter again. So you have a spectrum there that you can operate on in terms of hard censorship. But I do think, Jonathan, that last year we began to see it with anybody speaking out about vaccines. It was automatic deletion. Now we have this misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation rhetoric being introduced into the public consciousness, the online harms bill being passed, the albeit short-lived Ministry of Truth in America, headed up by Nina Yankovic. I think that was just a trolling session. They put her in, they made her sing supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. They got everybody's knickers into a twist and then they disbanded it. I think they were just having a laugh there personally, but there's certainly other sinister mechanisms in force to stop this. And even Twitter themselves have put a notice up to say that in terms of crisis, that they will be banning and limiting the use of the spread of misinformation. So who gets to define that? It's certainly not you and I, but at least on this platform, I want to believe that, listen, they could pull the plug on us as well, but I want to believe this will be like a last little bastion of freedom of speech, because we are fully independent. I think we have our own servers. We have free reign over who we get on. People can pretty much say what they like. And now we're starting to hack some people off. And trust me, there's going to be a lot more people get upset by the time I'm finished this year. I'm only getting warmed up. So I'm looking forward to whatever it is coming along. I can't wait.
I'm the same. It's like I had so many plans. You know, I'm kind of busy with work and with other things going on that I only ever touch a small percentage of what I plan to. But what's coming up, I'm really excited about as well. I can't say too much, but what I'll say is this. So far, there's been a lot of focus on what is going on and some attempt to answer the question of why it's occurring. However, there's been relatively little work done in terms of trying to explain the actual phenomenon that are really underlining the current times. And I'm talking now about ethical, moral, and even theological themes. This has been something that's been, in my opinion, relatively untapped. I really want to get into the question, and I will do my research, and I will take my time to formulate my opinion. And I mean this as somebody particularly of a Christian background, somebody who understands the Bible. Because let me say this, whether a person has ever read the Bible or sees any truth in it, I'll say this, what is happening is exactly how it would have felt if you're in Old Testament Israel and all the people flocked towards it, a king, but he was a bad king. Or the people, if you put yourself in Daniel's shoes, okay? Daniel was a prophet in Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar. Mm-hmm. You know, there was two tests that Daniel faced and his friends, and it was a test of righteousness. Then the first test was whether they were going to eat the choice meats that the king offered. And they didn't. They just had vegetables, watery soup. But it says that they grew stronger than those who had the choice meats. And secondly, there was a sound of music, and the king said, at the sound of music, everybody's got to go and bow down. And if you know the story, you know that Daniel and the Hebrew boys go in the fire and they get rescued. Here's my point. This theme of defiance to government, of having a red line, it permeates, I will make this claim, almost every single book in the Bible. It is one of the most foundational themes in the Bible. Now, the Soviet Union banned the book of Daniel for the reason I just mentioned, because it does have a connection with, I don't want to say defiance as much as integrity. This theological theme is massive. I personally believe there is a theological debate coming in the church that will be comparable to the previous ones, principally the Reformation. That's how big I think this debate is going to be.
I agree. My standing on these issues too. And you mentioned just briefly, you said, you know, if we do end up in this totalitarian hell, you know, there's no point in getting out of bed. You don't want to live like a slave. You don't want to live like somebody that's oppressed. And when you mention, the fiery furnace trial in the book of Daniel, you know, there was an idol made by Nebuchadnezzar, and the decree went out to everybody at the sound of music, if you don't bow down and worship this, you'll be killed. Okay, so Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they decided not to do that. They were brought before the king. The king got angry and he said, listen, I've heard a story that you won't bow down, and now I'm going to play the music again. And if you don't do it, you're dead meat. And they said, listen, whether you kill us or whether you don't kill us, we are not bowing down to this. If God saves us, he saves us. If he lets us die, he lets us die. But either way, we're drawing a line in the sand, and we ain't crossing that line. And I believe, my friend, you're touching on something that's dear to my heart. I believe there's a crunch time coming in so many ways, in so many areas. And one of them has to be literally, you know, you have to be prepared to forego your own life for what you believe in, because if you welch out and you accept it, your life isn't going to be worth living anyway. You're going to be living like a dog, or you're going to be living like an enslaved dog. So yeah, I agree with that. We can maybe expand on that as you continue to delve into your research in that and flesh that out a little bit more. But for now, flipping out, the time is flying by. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I want to touch on the WHO treaty, and I want to touch on the monkeypox shenanigans, which no doubt we'll be talking about for a very long time. So don't go away, listeners. Hope we haven't frightened you off. And if we have frightened you off, come back out from behind the sofa and rejoin us again in 2 minutes on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The GOP primary election results for the 17th of May show that former President Donald Trump continues to have enormous influence in the party. Of the 26 Trump-endorsed candidates for this latest round of primaries, which were in Idaho, Kentucky, North Carolina, Oregon, and Pennsylvania, just two lost. One was North Carolina's incumbent U.S. Representative Madison Cawthorn. The other was Idaho Lieutenant Governor Janice McGretchen, who ran a challenge against the current governor, Brad Little. McGretchen's loss is a big blow for Trump and freedom fighters in general, as her campaign hinged on her battle with Governor Little in opposing oppressive medical mandates. While most voters opted to stay with Governor Little, the combined vote of McGretchen and other candidates fighting the COVID medical mandates was close to 50%. Regardless of this loss, medical freedom can't be swept under the rug. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale,
gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home.
One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
The new communism is COVIDism, mandating that the truth be told. This is TNT Radio.
I think our jingle guy is going to have to get back on the microphone talking about communism, the new COVIDism. It's going to have to be the new monkeypoxism, because I have a horrible feeling in my bones. I hope I'm wrong about this, that this is going to be dominating conversations. We're going to see people running for their face masks and their hand sanitizers again. Do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised to see hazmat suits in the high street by Christmas. That's my prediction. Santa hazmat suits. You get a little red hat with a little piece of white fluffiness around it and a visor and some kind of gel dispenser in the hands. I don't know. Listen, this is tying in. Everything seems to be tying in with this WHO pandemic treaty, with the Davos Convention that's happening from the 22nd to the 26th. We're told that the Swiss Air Force are providing no-fly zones over Davos to protect those lovely globalists that are convening together to spread their filth. I think they're having a black mass there. It's not a convention at all, but hey, what do I know? Maybe I'm looking too much into it. There's talk, Jonathan. There's talk, and without getting into the details of the treaty, okay, if they do decide to run through with this, they have a timescale of 2 years, okay? So it could realistically, if it happens, they're talking 2024. Now, obviously, things can either happen faster than that, or they can happen on time, or they can not happen at all. And one of the counters to this is, look, don't worry, because if they do even put this through, they've got 194 odd member states. They all have to be operating together. Some may not play ball. It's not going to be enforceable, etc., etc. Does the monkeypox ace up the globalist sleeve? Not throw a spanner into the works, because all this talk of treaties and all this talk of getting lined up, they just wing out another emergency measures and they ramp up the fear even more. And dare I say it, when people see people with pimples, pimples and spots all over and lesions, it's a visual stimulus. It's not asymptomatic. It's going to terrify people. And it's like, just do what you need to do to keep us and our family safe. And back we go to square one. Am I being pessimistic, or can you see that happening?
Well, these people are dead serious in what they're obviously trying to achieve. So anything that potentially can further their cause is open to them. And obviously that includes biological agents or experimental products. Anything that, you know, I think that's really key people to keep in mind is you have to understand the philosophy of the assailant, let's just say. A good person to listen to on this, I would suggest, someone I've actually been in contact with and had a call with, is Dr. Tal Brown, who's a counterterrorism expert. He's been speaking up a lot on the spike protein as a neurotoxin.
What's he what called? He really... Sorry, give me his name again.
Sure. Dr. Tal Brown, so it's T-A-U, from South Africa. Great guy. we were connected on LinkedIn. We both got booted off. He would know Dr. Brian Ardis. This is the whole, you know, watch the water thing with Stu Peters. Great guy. Why he's so interesting is he's done his research on the spike protein. He's done his research on the jab, on the nicotinic acetylcholine receptors, and on this inflammatory pathway, all this stuff, which people who are interested can go and research and look into. Reason I bring him up is his job is basically to help prevent mass shootings, or to try to understand who's at risk of doing a school shooting, try to prevent it, work with the FBI, work with law enforcement, and so forth. When we're talking about these globalists, it's very important that we understand they're trying to achieve a goal of a human global collective under centralized leadership. They will not stop at anything to achieve it, because they're not, frankly, benevolent people who believe in liberty and democracy like we've all come to expect in the Western world. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think that monkeypox, as you said, can cause these severe skin lesions. It sounds scary, connected with smallpox. They can kind of play off the fact that it's related to smallpox, even though the variant that's been detected in the UK, according to the, you know, the newspapers, is the less severe strain. I think it's the West African clade rather than the Congo Basin clade. But if they can just show a few pictures of it in London, Northern Ireland, whatever, that could be enough. Because remember,
that's all they need.
Man in Wuhan. That's all they need.
That's all images. They need. That's all they need. And here we have again, okay, if you, the US FDA approved a vaccine in 2019, late 2019, against smallpox and monkeypox, and already the stocks have been bolstered by the American government. I think they've bought 13 million vaccines against this just in case. The UK are buying hundreds of thousands for what, 10, 12 cases. Now, if you go onto the gov.uk website, and they have a page dedicated to this. And Wikipedia, believe it or not, Wikipedia already has a smallpox or monkeypox 2022 epidemic page up and running that has been enforced since the 29th of April, detailing what's going on here. But the definition of the UK, or on the UK website, it does paint the picture that it's pretty innocuous. It's not something to get too concerned about. You can recover from it. Talks about transmission. If you go onto the CDC website, in America, it's completely different. They really focus on the fact that it's a respiratory, born in respiratory particles, that you need to ensure social distancing, that this is a primary method of transition. The UK will say, well, it's touching infected lesions. It can be from this. Listen, they can take whatever they want. They can make stuff up. They can make stuff up, or they can change definitions. They can do what they want. They change the definition of a pandemic. They change the definition of what a vaccine is. They change the definition of what herd immunity is. So why not just change the definition of a disease? They can do what they want, and people will suck it up like a straw.
Well, absolutely. And this is the really key point, I would say, in terms of, without going into too much detail, in terms of this WHO treaty on the table on Sunday, is that it centralizes the power into the Director General, which we all know is Dr. Tedros, to identify potential or actual disease threats. So it's like, it's even there in the very wording that's being introduced into the amendment. And the second part of this, of course, is this compliance committee, which can administer and enforce the mechanism over the 194 member states, unless, of course, they decide to withdraw themselves. But we can all imagine a situation where opt out, you're put under other political pressure and maybe trade sanctions if you are one of those countries. Because we know that our leaders in the G7 and in the West, they're all kind of signed up for it, because they were signed up to the agenda with COVID. They were given the script, obviously. So I think all these Western countries will go that direction. And it will just be these smaller countries, like we've seen in Central America, for example, and Africa, who might buck the trend, but it'll be easy for them to hammer down with economic sanctions. But one question I have, why on earth is the US Department of Health and Human Services the one to propose such an amendment? Why is the US a federal agency which should be concerned about the best leadership from America? I mean, this is supposed to be the most innovative country with the best leadership, with the most free, the one that truly embodies democracy. Why would you want to outsource that, not just to a body, but principally to the judgment of the Director General of the UN? This completely undermines national sovereignty.
It does. And do you know what it reminds me of? I mean, it's like, how can I say this? If you're in a job, say the job that you do, okay, you're down there doing your computer work, and you've got a boss and you've got a management team, and whoever owns your company says, you know what, we're going to get a consultant in to evaluate how you're working, to look at how productive you are, to find out better ways of doing things. I'd be like, you know what, just sack the management and just employ the consultant. Because if the management need to be told where they're failing and where they're getting it wrong, they're not fit for purpose, okay? And you also see this, I've seen this a lot in churches over the last 5 years. They get these external consultants in to say, hey, we're not growing. We need to appeal to the masses more. Can you do an audit? And they'll come in and they'll go around the parish. They'll knock doors. What would you like, Jonathan? Would you like to see more music? Would you like to see more cake sales? Would you like to see more of this? And then they will go back and present the document to the leadership or the vestry of whatever denomination it happens to be. If that was me, if I was a parishioner going, we're paying a consultant $6,000 to tell the minister how to run the church to get people in, let's get rid of the minister and just hire the damn consultancy firm, because this guy's not fit for purpose. So if you're prepared to cede your constitutions over to unelected representatives based in Europe from all over the world, that says to me that you as a government head or you as a leader of your country are not fit for purpose. If you can't even manage the common cold or a variant of the flu over the last 2 years and you've driven your own economy into the ground, to me that's a damning statement on self, that you have to cede that authority over to an external party. But again, people think it's a good idea. Oh, let's centralize it. Let's make it one size fits all. Let's not think too much about this. Let's just jump in behind the WHO. People, my friend, are their own worst enemies.
But it's interesting because, again, what you've touched on is a type of fatalism that basically says we're not enough by our own individual constituent nations. National sovereignty is a dead duck, basically. And even down to personal liberty is a dead duck. Because there's a threat that we're facing that supersedes that. And principally, we can be very clear about this, it's transmission. Transmission is what is able to put in the minds of people that another person is a potential pathogenic threat. Whether it's the unvaccinated are harboring variants that are going to cause you trouble or directly infect you. It's really just a very convenient means of bearing down upon people. And as I've said many, many times before, it's the same story with climate change, global warming, cybersecurity, identification, authentication. Exactly the same story that they tell us. There's no other way to deal with it unless we all do it. But what they're now saying, clearly, not only your personal liberty within your country, as according to what your country dictates, but your country themselves and its national sovereignty must be handed over, because maybe your national leaders are too inept to even make the right decisions. We need one person to rule over us, i.e. the Director General of the WHO in this example. So it seems to me that all this, let's just say failure, corruption, you know, Partygate with Boris Johnson, all these different scandals about breaking their own rules, it all plays in quite nicely for them to say, okay, well, maybe we're not the best leaders, but we will all follow the lead of the true leaders, the global leaders, the WHO. That seems to be the story that they're telling to me.
There was a speech Prince Charles gave last year. I think it was at this COP26 conference. And he talked about, he referred to someone who would come along and take care of business. And he wasn't referring to himself. He said, our leaders, with all due respect, are not capable of managing trillions upon trillions of assets and making decisions that affect the globe. But, and I quote him, he said, when he comes, then things will get sorted out. So yeah, you know what I'm going with that. Unfortunately, I wish we had another hour to dig into that one. But this is setting up the stage for completely centralized one world government. We're gonna have to stop here. We'll be hopefully talking to you again if you're up for it in a couple of weeks. I shudder to think what we'll be talking about in 2 weeks. I shudder to think, my friend. But listen, In the meantime, Mr. Jonathan Weissman, and again, let me give you a plug. You can connect with him on Twitter at All The Risks and on his website, alltherisks.com. He does a lot of research. He has a lot of video clips in there as well. He's a multidimensional kind of guy. Unlike me, I just sit and talk and talk and talk. He does a lot of digging, a lot of researching, and a lot of writing. And I'm always very, very happy to have him on. So Jonathan, thank you for your time today. It is much appreciated. Hopefully it hasn't been too stressful. And listen, spread the word out there, by the way, about TNT Radio. We need to keep growing. We're on a roll at the minute. We've got some momentum behind us. We're getting some bad coverage in the press, which is fantastic news. Nothing better than some bad publicity to raise the profile of the station. If you're listening, tell someone to tune in. If every one of you did that, we will instantly double our figures, like a case of smallpox, dare I say. We could double our viewing figures in a week if everybody just tells someone, infect someone with TNT, spread the TNT around, whether it be by lesions or by droplets. I don't care, but get the word out there. Jonathan, thank you. I'm Rick Munn. I'll be joined after the break by a lovely lady from the south of Ireland, from Kinsale, I tell you. Don't go away. This is TNT Radio.